So happy to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And we're I've really been looking forward to the next portion of our program as well. Actually, I really enjoyed talking with John Hildebrand. He's a wonderful guest and with a great story to tell. And our next guest has some, in her new book, has a wonderful group of stories to tell within her book. It's called Seventh Generation Earth Ethics, Native Voices of Wisconsin. And our guest is my colleague, Patty Lowe.
Hi, Larry.
Hi, Patty. She is a professor in my department, UW-Madison Department of Life Sciences Communication. She teaches a whole bunch of things, and she's digital storytelling, we might call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
be a good
I
way
think
to
that's
do
pretty
it.
Good.
Yeah, she's an enrolled member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, and her most recent book, again, Seventh Generation Earth Ethics, Native Voices of Wisconsin. And I really enjoyed reading your book today. Not today, but over.
I saw it on your desk this week, so I know you were.
I was
reading it over a period of time.
Yeah, and I love the idea. But you know, you're writing about the 12 somebody a representative from each of the 12 tribes that exist in Wisconsin.
That characterizes most of the work I've done. I've tried to include all 12 communities, and really it was from the last 20 years of work of traveling through those communities as I was writing other books, Indian Nations of Wisconsin, or Native People of Wisconsin, the children's textbook, that I met these extraordinary people, or I learned about these extraordinary historical figures in those communities, and this was an idea that's been percolating for about 20 years, thinking, Walt Brissett is such an interesting guy. I'd really like to introduce people to him. Or Joe Rose, boy, he'd be a great biography. Or Truman Lowe, the Ho-Chunk artist that people might be familiar with. And so when the Historical Society asked me to revise and expand my Indian Nations book, that gave me a good opportunity to collect these stories for this book, Seventh Generation.
It's a fascinating book, and you mentioned Walt Brissett. We'll talk about him later, but Walt was a very frequent contributor to this program. Walt and I have many great conversations, sometimes as a guest, but he always, he listened
call
a
in
lot.
Too.
He called a lot. Yes. So it was always a lot of fun.
Yes, one thing you couldn't ever accuse Walt of was being quiet and retiring.
No, not at all. Well, I want, and he is connected in a lot of ways, I think you describe him as the architect of the concept of seventh generation.
Of the constitutional amendment that he was pushing for, which basically was an amendment that established the right of every American to clean water and clean air.
Yeah.
And it was very much in keeping with the seventh generation philosophy.
Yeah, what is that philosophy?
Well, and this is a philosophy that my tribe, the Ojibwe, calls it seventh generation, as do the Oneida. But a lot of tribes have this as sort of a core organizing principle. They might call it something different. But seventh generation basically is a philosophy that encourages long-range thinking. It basically is a concept that in practice means that when you sit down to make a decision, you think about how that decision is going to affect seven generations into the future. It's a little bit different for the Oneida, but in the Ojibwe philosophy, you're projecting seven generations into the future. So you're thinking 240 years ahead, and it really makes a difference as to whether you plant a pine tree that you'll enjoy in your lifetime or an oak tree that maybe your children or grandchildren are going to enjoy.
Yeah, it's such a different. I was so glad, and I haven't heard, or maybe I just hadn't heard about it, and heard that term in a long, long time. But it really, you stop and think about it. You think in those terms, 240 years, you know, and I like the fact that it's tied to people, you know, seven generations of people.
And as an organizing principle, you know, you think about those things that really take a long time to work out, like, you know, environmental policy. And you contrast that with where we are in mainstream society, where everything is so short term. Our political cycle is, you know, 2 years. Our business cycle is sometimes just a quarter.
Right.
And there are some challenges that we as human beings face that require long range thinking. But on a really personal level, when you and I'm so glad you mentioned that concept of generations of people.
Yeah.
It really forces a kind of personal ethics in your decision making, because if I'm a business owner, for example, or an industrialist, and I'm contaminating water that I know my children are going to drink, you know, yeah. on a real personal level, you know, I allow my business to contaminate this water, and I know my children are living downstream, or my grandchildren are going to physically drink this water. It's sort of it's a check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even if I act in an unethical way, and I know that my children or my grandchildren are going to find out that I acted unethically, those are the kinds of things that really shape somebody's thinking and keeps you from, you know, acting in an unscrupulous manner.
Patty Lowe, our guest today, she is the author of Seventh Generation Earth Ethics, Native Voices of Wisconsin. Join in with your question. Are you familiar with the concept of making decisions based on the impact of the following seven generations? Is that a valuable principle for you? Maybe you're a Native American. We would love to have you share the earth ethics that your culture has instilled in you. Give us a call. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show. Certainly love to hear from you. The concept of environmental warrior comes up in your profiles.
A couple of places.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember the word.
Ogeechida.
Ogeechida. I was going to ask you, how do you pronounce that?
You pronounced it just fine. I knew I was reading your mind. I knew that that's what you were heading toward. But yeah, there are a couple of Ogeechida. That's the Ojibwe word for warrior. And Walt Brissett, I think, really epitomizes that. But people like Joe Rose is another Ogeechida. And I'm not sure what the word in Menominee would be, but Hillary Waukaw, Sparky Waukaw, is another environmental warrior. In fact, he's sort of the godfather of environmental activism in Indian country in this state.
Yeah. We'll take some calls, but Matt on Facebook said, Patty, your book, Indian Nations of Wisconsin, Histories of Endurance and Renewal, is the main text for my class at UW Marathon County.
Ooh, miigwech.
Yeah, it makes studying really fun, and can't wait to read the new one.
Oh, that makes me feel good. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that call. And again, we'll give you the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And I want to give Anton in Milwaukee a chance to join in. Let's see if we can get Anton on. Hi, Anton. Thanks for calling. Maybe we don't have him on. Let's try it again. Hi, Anton. Thank you for calling. Well, we'll get... Now I'm going to try. There. Now I think we've got you. Hi, Anton.
Hi.
Yes, what's on your mind?
I was just calling to say that I think that the seventh generation thing is a beautiful concept, and we need to start thinking more of that way as Americans, because now we're just concerned with what affects us immediately, and economically, we're always concerned with the impact right now. We're not concerned with what's going to affect our grandchildren, such as our health care problems. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. concerned with what are the implications immediately. We're not thinking, oh, you know, if we do this, it will help our grandchildren down the road and make them healthier when it comes.
Yeah, Patty, comment?
You know, Anton, I couldn't agree more. We live in such a state of, you know, instant gratification. I want it, and I want it now, that kind of mentality. And I think back, I like a lot of people, I took Philosophy 101. And boy, I learned about Rousseau and Kant and Hume and Locke. But I never, ever learned this philosophy. And I really think that there's a lot of promise in this kind of thinking.
And we'll talk some more about that. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guest, Patty Lowe. You stay with us. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Often the most inspiring people are those who work outside of the spotlight, but whose commitment and tireless labor benefit all of us. Larry Mueller here. So great to have you along on the Ideas Net as we talk with Patty Lowe, author Patty Lowe. She profiles environmental warriors from each of Wisconsin's native tribes in her latest book. And the latest book is titled Seventh Generation Earth Ethics, Native Voices of Wisconsin. Professor in the UW-Madison Department of Life Sciences Communications, and teaches digital storytelling and is an enrolled member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Ojibwe. And Patty, it's really a treat to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
It's great fun talking with her, and certainly inviting you to join in as well with your own questions and comments. Are you familiar with the concepts we've been talking about, this seven generations concept, or are you familiar with environmental warriors? That comes up in her profiles. Maybe you're a Native American. Would you love to? We would love to have you share your earth ethics with us as well at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Philip in Milwaukee has a question, so let's go there. Philip, hi. Thank you for calling.
It's not a question. I was present when the late Walt Brissett presented the Seventh Generation Amendment. I believe it was Earth Day in a tent on the lakeshore in Milwaukee, and he gave a presentation on it. I believe it was 1996, and I witnessed our late Mayor Frank Zeidler. And I believe she's related to one of your producers, Barbara Notestein, was then a senator. They both signed the pledge to support it. It was not until the year 2000, when I was at the Green Party convention, the night before it opened, I heard Winona LaDuke, and she's the one who said that Walt actually crafted it, and I had to follow her out of the room, leaving my camera and everything else, to tell her that I was present. I did not know that Walt actually crafted it.
He was. He was one of the creators of that. Oh, what a fascinating story, Philip. What was the reaction of the audience to that Seventh Generation Amendment proposal?
Well, since this was an Earth Day, I believe they were all in favor. Since I wasn't a politician, I was not one of the ones invited to sign it, but I certainly believed in it, and I thought maybe it died, because after I spoke with Winona, I didn't realize it was still alive, and I think we must push this, especially in the present environment.
Oh, Philip, thank you so much for that. And you mentioned the Green Party. I know that Walt was also one of the co-founders of the Lake Superior Greens and the Wisconsin Greens. He was really active in environmentalism. But my favorite Walt story, which I share in the book, is from 1997, when the Ku Klux Klan, for some reason, organized a parade in Ironwood, Michigan. And of course, the reaction, it was some kind of a recruitment parade or something. And, of course, the good people in Ironwood, you know, the vast majority and the mayor and everybody were just horrified that the KKK was coming to town. And a lot of opposition, you know, surfaced, right. you know, in response to that. And Walt and a number of other people created an alternative event, a Peace and Unity or Peace and Friendship. I can't remember what the name of this picnic was, but they got people into a park to just celebrate the goodness of humanity as a response to this. And so the Klan event really fizzled. There were very few people that showed up for the parade, and most of them were, you know, turned their backs silently as the Klan walked by. But what I thought was so beautiful, and this, you know, Philip, you probably had a sense being there when for the seventh generation of the sort of drama, the theatrics that Walt was so well known for, but he convinced the mayor of Ironwood to open up the fire hydrants after the Klan, you know, paraded by, open up the fire hydrants in back of them, and got the all the church people out there, all the people of faith out there with scrub buckets and brushes, cleaning the streets of the hatred, you know, washing the streets clean of the hatred and bigotry after this parade. It was just, wow. You know, I mean, I still get goosebumps just thinking about that. That was so typical of Walt Brissett, and I was really happy to include his biography in the book. He's an extraordinary individual, and really deserves to be right up there with the Aldo Leopolds and the Gaylord Nelsons that we, as Wisconsinites, embrace as environmentalists.
What I remember with it was such a shock when he went to me. When he died, and to so many people, because you just kind of, he's one of these people you kind of think, well, he's going to live forever.
Yeah. You know, Eric Schubring had a really interesting observation about Walt, and that's the way I approach these biographies. I talked and got stories from family members and friends and people that knew them well, and then looked at news reports and some of the more public documents. But Eric talked about how, you know, Walt was such a touchstone for him, and he could learn more from Walt than talking to 15 or 20 other people, because Walt was really kind of always ahead of the game and had this uncanny sense of what was happening on a regional and global scale, and being able to connect the dots between movements and trends, world trends.
Yeah. Philip, thanks so much for calling. I want to give Kurt in Springbrook a chance to join us. Kurt, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering if the Seventh Generation Amendment is somewhat similar to, like, the Constitution that Ecuador just passed with the help of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund that gave nature rights.
Oh, yeah. That's a really, really interesting concept. And I know that there are people that interpret the Seventh Generation Amendment as acknowledging that human beings are just part of the web of life, and that all living beings have a right to exist, you know, to have a quality of life. I think that's just something really interesting. I'm going to think about that a little bit, because it really is a very powerful concept. I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Kurt, for calling. I appreciate it very much. You can join in too, by the way. We have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Patty Lowe today, professor at UW-Madison and author of Seventh Generation's Earth Ethics, Native Voices of Wisconsin. Fascinating read. And again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. Email from Deb. I have the I love the seventh generation ethical decision making framework. We need to push for at least two generational thinking in our business and governing framework, and we'd be light years ahead of where we are now.
I couldn't agree more.
She's right about that. I think we have, you know, I like the fact that you featured all the tribes, but I also mm-hmm. like the fact that you selected women, both women and men.
And men, right.
You have some wonderful examples.
Don't I? I'm so pleased to share some of the stories of Native people in Wisconsin, and it's not just environmental warriors. That originally was what how I intended to frame the book, but as I talked to more people and got into more communities, it was really clear to me that really just about every Native person in Wisconsin who takes an active role in their community could probably be labeled an environmentalist, just because, you know, these are communities that live really close to their land base and resources, and they organize their societies around a special place. So I broadened that organizing principle a little bit to include people that sustained their communities. And so this allowed me to include educators like Dot David, who was an extraordinary woman in Mohican. She has a wing named after her at UWD Stevens Point. She was the first Native woman to graduate and did so much for American Indian education in Wisconsin. And unfortunately, she walked on earlier this month. People like Franny Van Zyl at Mole Lake, who was an ardent opponent of the Crandon Mine back mm-hmm. in the day and is still showing up at Madison rallies, but has been, and I guess I would, I certainly would include her as an environmental warrior. But then there are people like Carolyn Andler of the Brothertown Nation.
Genealogist.
Started with, you may know, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with the Brothertown are a group of Indians who arrived in the 1820s and 30s in Wisconsin and were terminated in the late 1830s and have been trying to get their federal acknowledgement back. Yeah, it's a process that involves a lot of paperwork and documents and genealogies and such. And Carolyn,
at the forefront.
She started with one name, her own.
Her own.
This was back, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. Started with one name and created a database of 45,000 names, not all Brothertown members, but marriages into primarily the Oneida Nation and the Mohican Nation as well. Certainly, she's done a lot to sustain her tribe. Wanda McFagan, the tribal historic preservation officer at St. Croix.
Oh, what a life she had.
Oh, boy.
My goodness me.
And
willing to talk about it.
And willing to talk about it. And I was so, it's hard to describe, you know, when someone shares that powerful of a story, I kept wanting to protect her and you know, kept asking, are you sure you want to share this? Are you sure you want to share this? And she was, you know, such a brave, generous spirit to say, no, you know, I want other people. I'm okay about talking, you know, with talking about the mistakes I made in my life if it's going to help other young women from making the same mistakes I did. You know, so these are the kinds of extraordinary people. Truman Lowe, you know, his huge organic sculptures, Truman is a much celebrated Ho-Chunk artist who creates these large-scale organic sculptures that reflect his tribe's environmental vision and his own personal environmental vision. And so these are the kinds of people whose stories are told in this book.
Lynn and Eau Claire, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry, and a wonderful good morning, afternoon to your guest. I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to both of you. This weekend, we stopped in the Dells and encountered, there was a bad situation. A white supremacist came into a restaurant and kind of destroyed the whole tenor of the community feeling. And I left just confused and angry, mostly angry, and feeling so impotent.
Oh, Ben, I can feel the hurt in your voice.
What do we tell the children, you know? But I don't feel the impotency. We are organic. Mm. You know, it's about... and the ironic thing is that we were on our way home from a union meeting, you know, and union rights are all about civil rights and, you know, rights for everyone. And it was a very, very, the paradox, and it was just a kind of a conundrum. But I feel empowered. Thank you.
Speaking out about things like that, communicating that, telling your story, I'm trying to do that through my books, trying to focus on those positive contributions that people are making. And I'm a cheerful optimist. I truly believe that if you act ethically, if you, you know, approach the world in a good way, that good things will happen. And so, just, you know, your pain in the experience that you encountered and your willingness to talk about that, that's a really positive way to combat that kind of ugliness.
Yeah.
And that's what my great-grandfather was a union martyr. And so, you know, for civil rights, for human rights, people have shed blood. And also for the rights of this gentleman to come in and disrupt an otherwise, you know, just fine situation. So you are left in a conundrum. Mm-hmm. But I thank you so much, because I do feel that just being given the opportunity to say that this exists, this attitude, it's, and we don't have to roll, but we have to continue the conversation.
Oh, thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate your call and certainly appreciate hearing your story, although it's not a story. I wish it was a story that we never would have to hear, because it never occurred. You know, it's one of, it's too bad. Ricardo and Racine, thank you for calling. Hello.
Oh, hello. A number of years ago, one of my students, who was half-blood Ojibwe from the Odena area, asked me to go pounding wild rice with him on the Cahoggan Slough.
It was
wonderful. They got teased about I'm not Native American, and they got teased about the pale face in the canoe. But I'm really concerned now. It seems like our governor has opened this area up to mining, and I've just read that some of the rice beds are in trouble. They're being polluted. You know, what can we do to help save this sacred area for the Native Americans?
Yeah. I have a couple of biographies in my book of people that are working on that specific issue of resource extraction and native resources. Right now, the present situation is that mining could be a threat. Right now, there's bulk sample mining going on, but the full scale mining hasn't happened. I think it, but to your point about wild rice beds being adversely affected, we do know that in Minnesota, for example, downstream from some of the taconite mines, similar to the kind of open pit taconite mining that would be allowed in Wisconsin if this project at the headwaters of the Bad River was allowed to proceed, we do know that at least 50 miles of wild rice downstream from those mines in the St. Louis River, for example, is now gone. There's no more rice. And Minnesota is so concerned about this that they're actually discussing legislative responses to sulfate levels in wild rice lakes. So they recognize this as a problem. I think it's just really important to talk to your neighbors, talk to your legislators, let your voice be heard, and share information about the issue, because you know we're not. I think when a lot of people think about mining, they're thinking about our flag. You know, the miner, shaking hands mm-hmm. with the farmer. It's part of our tradition, and you know we have relatives who mined, and we're proud of them, and. You know, we should be, but we're talking about a different kind of mining. You know, it's not grandpa with a little pickaxe over his shoulder going into a little shaft mining. We're talking about, you know, mountaintop removal and large scale mining that has it has ramifications. And so we need to understand what we're talking about and be educated about this issue. But I certainly appreciate your concern about the rice beds. Yeah. And one thing, you know, more is, you know, mining is just one threat. We have lakes that 5 years ago were 95% covered in wild rice that today don't have a lick of wild rice on them now because, and you know, Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission has been doing these pretty exhaustive longitudinal studies on lakes. And we're starting to really have some disturbing evidence that we're starting to see the effects of climate change because rough fish are moving in and they're disturbing, you know, they're eating the native fish and some of these, you know, carp, I think it's carp that's the problem in this particular lake I'm thinking of in Burnett County. But you know, their spawning activities are ripping out the fragile rice roots. So we have the normal kinds of weather events, you know, with floods that and bad storms that come through and knock down the rice at its fragile, you know, at its most fragile stage, its floating leaf stage. So there are all these things that are already creating stress on the rice. And so mining is just another, it's one of many threats.
More than many.
Yeah.
And thanks again for calling, Ricardo. And Patty, thank you so much for being with us today. I really, really enjoyed your book. And I know you're going to be talking tomorrow night. You have a reading?
Yep. We have a book talk at the Fond du Lac Public Library. I'm so excited because we have a number of Brothertown tribal members who are joining me for that because that's one of the new chapters in Indian Nations of Wisconsin. And of course, you know, they'll probably want to also talk about the Brothertown entry in seventh generation earth ethics.
And then this weekend, you're at the book festival.
The book festival, Saturday afternoon, yeah.
And in Madison.
Correct.
Boy, it's a real pleasure to have you with us, Patty. Thank you so much. And I know you've got a new, that revised edition of your other book. We're going to have to have you back and talk about that one as well.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Patty Lowe is the author of the book that we've been discussing, Seventh Generation Earth Ethics, Native Voices of Wisconsin. And thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.